Katie, I just want to thank you so much for being here tonight. I really wasn't sure who would be here, and I'm just so very grateful to see you all. I just need to confess that I uploaded the wrong presentation. I've been barnstorming. I was in Minneapolis last week. I'm here this week, so I put the wrong thing. But that's my contact information, so you know who I am. I'm Lissy Friedman, and I'm from the Public Health Advocacy Institute in Boston at Northeastern University School of Law. And I'm going to be talking to you today about a mock trial curriculum that we're working on for high school students. At the moment, it's in a pilot stage where we're just doing it for, you know, we're going to do it for one group, see how it works, work out some of the kinks. We're being supported in our efforts by FAMRI, which is, I believe, Flight Attendants Medical Research Institute, and that came out of the settlement of the flight attendants suits against the tobacco industry for the harm that they suffered as a result of secondhand smoke in their job. And so this is going to be a criminal trial where we put tobacco industry executives on trial for criminal charges for the death of a person who dies of secondhand smoke. It's going to happen in a workplace setting. And so I, not knowing that you guys know this already, I just hedged my bets and I put a few statistics up here on, you know, basically what we're going to try to convey to the students. This is sort of a threefold exercise. It's to help them learn about the effects of secondhand smoke. It's to help them learn about the tobacco industry and the history of the litigation and the deception. And third, it's to show them about how the American justice system works. And I went through a very seminal, really important event in my young life. In about eighth grade, I did a mock trial. I think it was like a Nuremberg trial thing. And that inspired me to want to become a lawyer. So when the opportunity came up for us to do this, I was really fascinated and hope that, you know, at some point, you know, on any of those three levels, we'll reach some of these students and help convey to them some information. So this is just some secondhand smoke in workplace figures, courtesy of the most excellent folks at the Americans for Non-Smokers Rights Foundation. They've got lots of terrific fact sheets. If you're doing PowerPoint presentations, I definitely recommend you hook up with their website. And this just shows you the coverage of secondhand smoke legislation. We've got a pretty big chunk of the country covered, but it's a little deceptive because what it mostly is in very highly populated cities or states where there has been some legislation. A great deal of the country is not covered, so we need to pursue that, but we also need to as the previous speakers have talked about, pursue messages to help kids understand what's going on. I also should mention that this victim is going to die of a heart attack, and the reason why we chose that was because, as you can see, death by heart disease is actually the most common, even though the most litigated so far has been lung cancer. It pales in comparison to those affected by heart disease. So I'm just going to give you a quick sketch of how the mock trial is going to work. Our victim is actually, her bio is based on a real person. Has anybody been to a conference and heard Renee Hicks speak? She's hilarious. She's a stand-up comedian, lost part of her lung to lung cancer, even though she never smoked a cigarette. And she gave us our blessing to model our victim after her. So the victim's a stand-up comedian who has performed in comedy clubs her whole adult life. She's a non-smoker. She's worked for a number of years at this specific club and has no other health risk factors. And the reason why we made it a stand-up comedian as opposed to, say, a waitress or a casino worker is because, you know, you could theoretically say to that person, well, why don't you get a job somewhere else? But this person, this is her life. This is her dream. And she doesn't necessarily have a choice about what comedy clubs are going to hire her and whether, you know, they're going to be smoke-free or not. So we felt that that was important to drive the message home that this is not you know, just a job. This is her life. The defendants. I love my assistant Michael. He took two classes in college on PowerPoints. My PowerPoints used to be really boring, so you can thank him. So the three defendants are going to be the president, CEO of the tobacco company, the scientist who's in charge of knowing everything there is to know about the mechanisms of the cigarette, and then their PR person. Other witnesses are going to be, for the prosecution, we're going to have a coworker who witnessed the comedian's death. We're going to have the comedian's cardiologist. So part of the fact pattern is that she was aware that she had was developing heart disease. We haven't figured out yet, what the window of time is going to be, whether it's going to be a couple years or 5 years, or whether it's going to be a year or 6 months. And part of what we're trying to do with this is we're trying to make the victim somebody that the students can identify with, but we're trying not to steer them too far in one direction or another in terms of a verdict. So we have many questions yet to answer, and that's why we're doing this as a pilot, to try to get some feedback. Does it make a difference to you whether the person knew for 5 years that she had heart disease? Or, as I heard a presentation earlier today, it was a gentleman talking about the Surgeon General's report from the CDC, and the new Surgeon General's report says, you can die instantly from exposure to secondhand smoke. So we haven't exactly figured that out yet. On the defense side, in addition to the people being prosecuted, they're going to have their expert witness to testify against both the to dispute the alleged dangers of secondhand smoke, and also that secondhand smoke caused this specific death. That's just sort of their classic modus operandi. Other participants are going to be the prosecutors and the defense attorneys, and we're not sure how many people that will be. It'll really be dependent upon the size of the class. Some really wonderful people came up to me at when I gave this presentation in Minneapolis, like Brittany and some other folks, and somebody said, this would be great for smaller situations like debating teams, things like that. So that's also something to think about. And then we'll have jury members, as many as needed. And the judge will act as the teacher will act as the judge and sort of moderate things. And we're not going to go too heavy on the rules of evidence or anything like that, but we do want to teach them sort of how things move in a courtroom, what burden of proof is, and just little things so that it's at least as realistic as law and order. So I'm going to tell you a little bit. Most of what I know about the rules of evidence I learned on Law and Order. I really stank at trial. I was an appellate advocate in law school. I was not good at trial. So I'm going to tell you about the criminal charges. And before I do, what I want to tell you is that the way we decided what the criminal charges were going to be was we did a survey of a couple of states. We did Massachusetts and New York and looked at their statutes, every facet of every statute that we thought was permanent, and we just came up with a model statute, which is a very common thing to do in mock trial exercises. We looked for commonalities, and we looked for something that we felt fit the fact pattern realistically. We feel that was important. So the first charge is murder, and this is going to be criminally negligent homicide, which the elements I'll just read quickly are failure to perceive a substantial and unjustifiable risk that death will occur. Risk must be of such nature and degree that failure to perceive it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care a reasonable person would observe in that situation, one who acts recklessly when he perceives and consciously disregards the risk. Fraud. The fraud, some of you are probably familiar with the 2006 decision by U.S. Federal Judge Kessler in the Department of Justice's case, the racketeering case against the tobacco industry. She's already found that they committed fraud and conspiracy, and so a lot of the evidence that we're going to present will be heavily borrowed from real trials, including the RICO case. So that fraud is acting with intent to obtain property or money from persons by false or fraudulent pretenses, representations, or promises. Scheme to defraud must be an ongoing and systematic thing. Intent to defraud based on a disregard or reckless indifference to truthfulness of the defendant's statements or acts. Conspiracy, agreement between at least two persons to commit an unlawful act. You need at least two parties to have an agreement. Significant causing significant harm to an individual or the general public as to be seriously contrary to public interest requires intent to commit unlawful act. And again, this is all language drawn straight from actual statutes. So the testimony, there is going to be both direct examination and cross-examination. There will be no script We aren't scripting this. We want the students to organically and spontaneously come up with what they think. But what they will get is each witness will get a dossier or a bio of themselves, who they are, and sort of what their experience has been vis-a-vis their role in the trial or in, you know, the event. And based on that, they will have sufficient information to formulate an answer that is consistent with the character that they're playing. The exhibits and indeed the questions that will be asked in the trial will all be derived from actual, to the best of our ability, actual tobacco industry internal documents, testimony from real tobacco trials, mostly secondhand smoke trials, but a little bit of direct smoking trials, just especially when, you know, when you talk about what the defense's expert witness says, that, you know, that's sort of universal. They always say, well, everybody, you know, even if smoking or secondhand smoke does cause disease, it never causes disease in the people who sue us. So that's just their standard line. We'll also have public health reports and studies for them to look at, and fact sheets compiled by public health groups, probably in a slimmed down fashion so that they don't get too bogged down in epidemiological studies and, you know, things like that. But again, we want to keep it as real as possible, and because we really feel that if, for instance, we edit things too much or even just make things up out of whole cloth, they're really not going to believe it or take it seriously. I thought it was very important, for instance, to put Bates numbers on the exhibits. Bates numbers, for anybody who's not familiar, are like fingerprints, and when you're in a trial, you have each page of each document has a number on it, and these students will be able to go online and look up the original document themselves, and we will encourage them to do so. We have some supplemental materials that we're going to be providing. First of all, a teacher's guide to help facilitate the trial. We're also going to suggest additional research topics that the teacher can assign should they choose to, say, protract this over a month instead of maybe a week, where it would, you know, you could really turn it into like a unit of study. Also, internet links for the students to go to. We'd like them to visit the tobacco document websites if they're interested. We'd also like them to visit the tobacco websites to see, you know, what the unvarnished, straight-out message is from the tobacco industries, which is particularly on secondhand smoke, they're not giving an inch, and they're still denying that there's any causation between disease and secondhand smoke. So basically, as I said before, we're trying to do this where there are issues for debate on both sides. I mean, no matter how loathsome the defendant is, there's always something for them to say on their behalf, and we particularly don't want the students to feel like it's a futile exercise. I mean, even in the Nuremberg trial that I participated in, there was a guy who was on trial for publishing anti-Semitic newspapers. Well, you know, if you put that in the context of, say, our Constitution, well, he does in America, he'd have the First Amendment right to be as anti-Semitic as he wanted. He was convicted in the Nuremberg trials. So that gives students something to at least to sink their teeth into. But we hope that it'll be sort of obvious that if not a criminal act, it certainly is an antisocial act to be selling these deadly products that they know are killing people who aren't even participating in what they call an adult choice. So the prosecution is trying to punish the tobacco company's defendants' bad acts resulting in the death of an innocent person. They're going to say the tobacco industry knew its products was deadly and placed profits above public health. Then there's the question, what is the duty of government to regulate smoking in the workplace? We've only got 58% of the country covered. Do individuals have to take the initiative to protect themselves? You know, did she have to heed a warning from her cardiologist and, you know, give up her dream of being a comedian and go, you know, be a data processor or something, or, you know, work for UPS or whatever, you know, whatever it is she would do otherwise. The defense has a right to sell a legal product. That's what they always say. You know, the tobacco industry is constantly saying, well, it's a legal product. Does secondhand smoke really cause heart disease? That's something that the tobacco industry obviously disputes. We've got the Surgeon General's most recent report from 2006 that says there is no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. So that's it. And should we stick with the trend of just answering questions in between things?